The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Just getting set up here for the big broadcast, yet another live broadcast here from our beautiful Edstone studio. Had some fun last night on the dance floor, and of course a nice big Thanksgiving meal, some leftovers for lunch today as well. Delicious. Always nice to have the turkey and the stuffing and so on. So some extra treats for this Thanksgiving week, and we'll be talking a little bit later on in the program about, I guess you could say, a Thanksgiving theme. We'll revisit Abraham Lincoln and some of the proclamations that he made back in the 1860s. Well, just to begin with the news, I guess the transition officially begins. They had the announcement, or Emily Murphy, the gal that heads up the General Services Administration, she sent this letter to the Biden campaign, explained in it why the transition or the process for it could not happen earlier. She said the results weren't certified, and there were, of course, all these legal disputes. And so she said there really isn't a lot of precedent for when to move forward. But she decided to go ahead, made the determination on her own, and based on some of the states, I guess, that had been coming in with certification. But we should step back from this, just like we did a couple of weeks ago, when we said that the media don't decide who is president. It's of course, the voters, the Electoral College. And in the same way, the GSA, this General Services Administration, they don't decide. They just make the resources available to the incoming team, or at least, or I guess we should say, the team that the media has anointed. She said this, though, just to stipulate or just to qualify her statement to the Biden campaign. She said the actual winner of the presidential election will be determined by the electoral process detailed in the Constitution. Now, you'd never know this based upon the way that the media covered this story yesterday. Now, I think it's also quite revealing, and we've noticed this before with the two canvas workers in Michigan that were bullied into voting on the certification, voting to certify. And then, of course, they rescinded that vote later because they were lied to. They were threatened. Notice what Emily Murphy said in her statement. She's explaining here the pressure that she came under to go forward with this and to go ahead and allow this funding for the Biden campaign. She said, I did receive threats online, by phone, and by mail directed at my safety, my family, my staff, and even my pets in an effort to coerce me into making this determination prematurely. Some would say it's still premature. In any event, she says, even in the face of thousands of threats, I always remained committed to upholding the law. So here again, you have the radical leftist thugs that are there threatening this woman and threatening her family because she wouldn't open up the funding, the few million dollars, I think it is. And of course, it clears the way for him to be briefed, I guess, Joe Biden. I'm not sure what it actually opens up. But here she is being threatened by these radical leftists. These are individuals that do not want anything to slow this down. They do not want the election canvas board members to vote against certification. They will chase you down. They will threaten you, intimidate you, to get you to go forward with their agenda. They don't want attorneys representing the Trump campaign. They don't want any attorneys. If they can intimidate them into surrendering, they'll do it. They certainly don't want Donald Trump to have his day in court. This is the way they operate. This is the new standard on the left. Bully and threaten them until you get your way. Throw a temper tantrum. Just like those reporters in that room when Vice President Pence left. I played that clip for you last week. As they were screaming at him. And shouting at Kayleigh McEnany as well. Shouting at her during her press conference last week. So much childishness. It's Isaiah 3. All of these babies that have never been taught to restrain themselves, to be dignified. And so they're just like out of control children. Undisciplined children. Here's what the president tweeted out following Emily Murphy's letter to the Biden campaign. He said, "I want to thank Emily Murphy at GSA for her steadfast dedication and loyalty to our country. She has been harassed, threatened, and abused, and I do not want to see this happen to her, her family, or employees of GSA." And then he says, "Our case strongly continues." So this is a man who refuses to be bullied. "Our case strongly continues. We will keep up the good fight, and I believe we will prevail. Nevertheless, in the best interest of our country, I'm recommending that Emily and her team do what needs to be done with regard to initial protocols, and have told my team to do the same." So he opens the way for initial protocols. And as far as CNN is concerned, this is the concession. It's the concession we've been waiting for 2.5 weeks. Here's what Don Lemon said on CNN last night, clip one.
"Tonight, and the breaking news is that, you ready? It is over. The desperate refusal to admit the reality everyone else has seen for 16 days now, it is over. And Joe Biden is the president-elect, whether the current president likes it or not. So tonight, the transition to the Biden administration can finally officially begin."
And Don Lemon goes on to say how that it couldn't happen at a better time. I mean, we're coming into a slow news cycle over the Thanksgiving holiday. We've got to have this sorted out before Thanksgiving. I mean, it's been 16 days. It's been like an eternity as it is. 16 days? And so they want to button it up before Thanksgiving. And as I keep saying, or I have been the last few days, the litigation is just beginning. And the president got a pretty good or quick response from the appeals court over the lawsuits in Pennsylvania. And then yesterday there was also, I mean, it was back and forth, I guess, in Michigan, but the state legislators agreed to hold a hearing into all the election irregularities. And I believe that starts tomorrow. And as far as the appeals process regarding the Pennsylvania case, I believe briefings for that have to be filed no later than next Monday. So all of that is in motion. And yet you have everyone, it seems, from both sides of the aisle, calling on this president to surrender. Now, even Rush Limbaugh, he didn't obviously call upon him to surrender, but he said on his program, I believe yesterday, that press conference, he was disappointed with it, the one last Thursday when Giuliani came out with Sidney Powell and Jenna Ellis. He said we were expecting bombshells, and they didn't bring it. So they better start revealing some bombshells in a hurry. And I guess in one sense, they are under a shortened time frame. And it is, as I said yesterday, it's an uphill battle. But there's not a lot of strong support for this president at home or abroad. Here in the UK, that's the theme of the papers today. It's over. It's over. Here's a headline in the Telegraph This is a more conservative paper. Donald Trump agrees to begin formal transition to Biden presidency. So it's a done deal. It's like they don't even read or listen to what the president says. I think he's doing this more for Emily Murphy's family than he is for the Biden camp. That said, here's another headline. Donald Trump's green light for the transition is a concession in all but name. And of course, that's not at all what the president is saying. But that's what they're saying he's saying. It's a lot of wishful thinking. It's like I said last week when we went through that example in Raising the Ruins. They just want him to give up. Why won't he surrender? Why won't he make it official? Why won't he throw in the towel? It's been 16 days. Byron York, I think he said, he's a conservative or a relative conservative. He said, oh, it was just a horrible weekend for the president. Just horrible. Really? The message, the underlying message of it all is, why won't he just quit? And of course, the fact that this president, that's why this president is in the position that he's in. One reason why is he will not quit. You think about Mr. Armstrong's booklet, The Seven Laws of Success, and that sixth law that he discusses in there, perseverance, or sticking to it, never giving up, never quitting. He says, many people have given up and quit when, if they had just stayed on a little longer, their lives might have been a great success. What will happen in the next several days or weeks, being that the president is going to continue on, continue fighting for a little bit longer? Mr. Armstrong said this, yes, 9 in 10, at least once or twice in a lifetime, come to the place where they appear to be totally defeated. All is lost, apparently that is. They give up and quit when just a little more determined hanging on, just a little more faith and perseverance, just a little more stick-to-itiveness would have turned apparent certain failure into glorious success. See, the fact that they rush to the microphone to tell you just how off the wall the press conference was, or how crazy Rudy Giuliani is, or his ghoulish appearance because he had some hair dye rolling down his cheek. Or in this case, they run to the microphones. He's conceded. It's all but a concession. I mean, it's a concession except in name only, but he's given up. He's thrown in the towel. You look at the headlines. Mr. Armstrong said, the sixth law of success is endurance. Stick-to-itiveness, I've called it. The Bible says, he that endures unto the end. There's a spiritual lesson in this too, as you can see. He that endures unto the end, the same shall be saved. That's from Matthew 24 and verse 13. Sticking with it all the way to the end. Never give up. You think about, you know, something Churchillian that obviously comes to mind, among other things, the fact that he would not surrender. There's a lot of radical evil forces arrayed against this president and his administration, and he's fighting back. At the American Thinker, it says, no, it's not time to move on. It's not time to quit. It says, unfortunately, this election is not like normal elections. Should this election, with all its signs of massive fraud, succeed for the election thieves, the U.S. faces a bleak future, no different from that of California. Everybody knows it. Everybody can see it. President Trump tweeted out this morning that 79% of Trump voters believe the election was stolen. almost 80%. And of course, his tweet said, they're right. It was rigged. And you have all of these affidavits, and you have a lot of lefties that are concerned about how this will play out in the courts, especially as it goes higher up. And that's why you see so much wishful thinking in their reporting. Don Lemon, it's over. And good to know it's before Thanksgiving. American Thinker says, why must we continue to fight? Because it might be 70 long years before anything changes politically in the U.S. if we don't. The machines appear to be rigged, and they're all in the uncooperative hands of Democrat big city political machines and governors. Bernie Sanders was a pilot project. Democrats stole his nomination once in 2016 and again in 2020. Anyone think they do less with Trump? They've done it repeatedly. They've turned California into a harvesting farm, a ballot harvesting farm. And then they cheated Bernie Sanders out of it in 2016. Then they did it again this year. And then all of these voices, astoundingly, even the ones on the right, say nothing happened this time around. It was perfect. It was perfect. That's what even the DHS said 9 days after the election. Why, this was a perfect election. Everything worked flawlessly. We'll talk more about Smartmatic and some of the alarms that were going off back in 2016, just a follow-up to what we've covered the last couple programs. But it says here, either we fight now, this is American Thinker, either we fight now and keep fighting with President Trump for any scrap of justice that can be found, or we will find ourselves submerged without remedy in a sea of oligarchic socialism. We don't have any choice, they say. We have to fight. Over at the website, The Stream, this author says, if this vote fraud was real and leading Democrats are really so disdainful of democracy, is the time for taking extraordinary means to stop them now? Or once they fully control the U.S. military, the FBI, the NSA, the CIA, the IRS, and the Secret Service? See, look at what they were doing with those agencies during the Obama years and even into the Trump years. The swamp runs deep. Look at what they did. They tried for 4 years to overturn the results of 2016. And now here they are. Oh, 16 days. Look at how much damage to the democracy he's caused. It says here, once the last flickers of free speech have flickered out on social media and the last cable network switched sides, as Fox News just did, should we wait? Should we wait longer before we really roll up our sleeves and fight back? Should we do it once courts have essentially nullified the Second Amendment and millions of our timid neighbors have dutifully turned in their guns? Once Antifa expands into every American city, do we have time to push this off another 4 years? There's a few voices like this, but not that many. Not that many. It's just like my father said. Donald Trump has proved himself to take a stand where few others are willing to stand. So he sends out a late night tweet. He sent the following that Emily's statement to the Biden camp, Emily Murphy. President Trump sends out this tweet. He thanks her. He acknowledges that she was, you know, attacked, threatened. And then he sends up a follow-up tweet later. And he says, what does GSA, that's the General Services Administration, what does GSA being allowed to preliminarily work with the Dems have to do with continuing to pursue our various cases on what will go down as the most corrupt election in American political history? We are moving full speed ahead. Did you get that, Don Lemon? We're moving full speed ahead. We'll never concede to fake ballots and Dominion. Well, now, he just let go of or cut ties with Sidney Powell. And she was the one looking into Dominion and Smartmatic. He tweets out last night, we will never concede to fake ballots. That's the avenue that Giuliani and Ellis are on, among others. And then Dominion. And that's Sidney Powell's fight. That was a tweet that went out just last night. Speaking of Sidney Powell, by the way, Jenna Ellis was, I believe, maybe it was Fox News, I can't remember, but she was on and asked about, hey, yeah, it's Lou Dobbs. He asked her about cutting ties with Sidney Powell on Sunday night. And listen to what Jenna Ellis, she's, again, one of the president's attorneys, what she had to say last night, clip two.
Ultimately, the legal team was kind of looking at two different directions. And like lawyers do, we all discuss the best legal theory to serve the client's best interests. And in this particular case, we want to make sure to preserve election integrity. And Sidney is very much focusing on Dominion voting systems. And that's going to be a much longer strategy. And that's going to be something that she's investigating. And right now, where Rudy and I and the other members of the legal team are focused is making these claims, looking at the election official fraud.
So they're looking at the fraud there with the election officials, you know, changing the laws at the last minute. These, like the Pennsylvania court overruling, basically, the state legislature. And then all of the ballot stuffing. And then the, you know, the unfair practice of keeping poll watchers away. Republican poll watchers. They couldn't observe the process. So that's obviously moving forward with greater urgency, although Sidney Powell over the weekend did say she's going to have something filed this week. We'll see. But as Jenna pointed out, that's a much longer strategy. I mean, that's really going after the entire system. When you start looking into Smartmatic and all of these ties to Venezuela, and of course the media, they look at this today and say, oh, come on, this communist influence? And as I'll show you later on, that was all over the media back in 2006 and 2007. And then periodically after that, and then we get up to 2020, and all of a sudden these companies, they're all squeaky clean. Even as Dominion goes missing, even as they empty out their offices, where are the Dominion executives? They have the t-shirts. Where's Hunter? Now it's, where's Dominion? How about that one? We should market that, Sam. Where's Dominion? Where are the Dominion executives? They bring forward Mr. Steele, Michael Steele. They bring forward a rhino. They bring forward someone right out of the deep state and think that well, now it's all concluded. Everything's been debunked. Michael Steele spoke on Fox News for 10 minutes on Sunday. Smartmatic acquired Sequoia Voting Systems. That's the third largest voting machine maker in America, or it was at the time. This is going back to the early 2000s. And as I went through with you yesterday, it was the Democrat Congresswoman, Carolyn Maloney, who sounded the alarm. She said, wait a second. This is a company that's got all these direct ties to the Venezuelan government. And they're buying this American voting system company? That needs to be investigated. I played for you the clip from CNN back in 2006. CNN didn't like the sound of it. CNN, Carolyn Maloney, Democrat. I'll read some excerpts from the New York Times and the New York Post. Sorry, the Washington Post in just a little bit. In any event, because of Carolyn Maloney sounding the alarm, she called for the investigation of Smartmatic, looking into this purchase of Sequoia. And the reason why it was alarming at the time is because Sequoia was basically running a lot of elections in the United States at the time. Okay, so the investigation, it was kicked off by the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, the CFIUS. So just to give you the timeline, May of 2006, that's when Carolyn Maloney raised questions about Smartmatic and the Treasury Secretary of the U.S. saying that, you know, we need to investigate. And then in July of 2006, the Treasury acknowledged that it had contacted Smartmatic. No investigation at that point, however. October of 2006, Smartmatic announces that it was undergoing a CFIUS investigation. So Smartmatic says, okay, we're being investigated. That's in October of 2006. And then, follow the timeline, in December of 2006, Smartmatic announced that it was withdrawing from CFIUS review because it was selling Sequoia. All right, look, if you're going to investigate us like this, we'll just sell Sequoia and move on and move away quietly. That's what happened. All this happened back in 2006. Now, according to Carolyn Maloney, that CFIUS investigation never concluded. It came to an end, as you just saw from that timeline. It came to an end when Smartmatic offloaded Sequoia. And guess who bought Sequoia? Dominion. Dominion, they're right at the heart of the scandal this time around. The Canadian company. It has offices in Denver, too, but Toronto, Denver. Here their offices are emptying out. Dominion workers on LinkedIn, they're blotting out their record with the company. It's just all happened. Reporters could care less. Nothing to see here. Nothing to look into. Nothing to investigate. What does it say about Smartmatic if in the midst of an investigation by the U.S. government, they say, all right, we've had enough. We'll go ahead and sell Sequoia. Leave us alone. This is what Sequoia Dominion wrote. So Dominion bought Sequoia. I think it was around 2008 or 10. 2010, I think it is. I'll read a quote to you in just a second. But this is what Dominion wrote about the CFIUS investigation. They summarized it on their website. It says, Sequoia was acquired by Smartmatic, a multinational technology company, which had developed advanced election systems, voting machines included, in November 2007, following a verdict by the CFIUS, Smartmatic was ordered to sell Sequoia, which it did to its Sequoia managers having U.S. citizenship. So again, we've got to go back and look at some of these details, but here it's a different story. Carolyn Maloney back at the time said the investigation never did conclude. It never did finish. Here they're saying it was concluded, they ordered the sale and so on, and then we came in and purchased it in June of 2010. Some conflicting testimony, so to speak. Now, I bring this up because you look at some of the questions that Sidney Powell is raising today, and it's really very similar to what Democrats and the major media were warning about years ago. And to be sure, there were even reports this year. I just haven't played all the clips. But in the lead up to this election, they were out there saying just how vulnerable these systems are to being hacked. And yet now, because it's Sidney Powell or someone close to the Trump team, and now because President Trump has hopefully lost, there's a very different message that they want for you to take away from all of this controversy. And it's this. It was perfect. It was perfect. No Venezuela connections. No connections abroad, really, to speak of. The machines worked flawlessly. All the operators. What did Michael Steele say? I just can't imagine someone in a top position actually working to subvert the government. I just can't imagine that they would actually cheat. They did it with Bernie Sanders twice. And we're supposed to believe they wouldn't dare try it with Donald Trump, one of the most significant elections in American history. Listen to Fox Business from yesterday as they just mock Sidney Powell and this so-called investigation into all of these international ties to Smartmatic. Clip 6.
Mayor Giuliani and Jenna Ellis released a statement last night clarifying that Sidney Powell is not a member of the Trump legal team. This after days of Powell touting a flood of evidence proving Dominion voting machines deleted and flipped votes to favor Vice President Biden over President Trump using commie-made election stealing software. But, you know, I did enjoy, Jessica, some of the claims that Sidney Powell was making, not because I thought they might be true, but because it takes a lot of work to correlate Venezuela with George Soros and the Clinton Foundation, but she did a pretty good job. But how did all of that fall apart?
Well, it fell apart because there was nothing to begin with. It was literally a collection of every bonkers rumor there is on the internet or in right-wing media.
Okay, so it's all a big joke, or it's just this bonkers, you know, conspiracy theory. Came out of nowhere. Listen to the Wall Street Journal. This is December 22nd, 2006. It says, voting machine company Smartmatic said it would sell its U.S. subsidiary to end a review by the Committee on Foreign Investment. So this is different. This is different than what Dominion says on its own website today about how it came to acquire Sequoia. It said it would sell its U.S. subsidiary to end a review by the Committee on Foreign Investment. Carolyn Maloney, remember, said the review, the investigation, never did finish. It never was concluded. The review was looking into whether Smartmatic is partially owned by the Venezuelan government. The Venezuelan government. The Wall Street Journal says Smartmatic, and I'll get to the New York Times in just a second. It says Smartmatic came to prominence in 2004 when its machines. Now listen to this. Again, you look at the track record. You look at the fruits. And there's people today dismissing it as if they've had a perfect track record for the last two decades, and that's not true. Smartmatic came to prominence in 2004 when its machines were used in an election to recall President Chavez, which Mr. Chavez won handily, and which the Venezuelan opposition said was riddled with fraud. So who are you going to believe? Who are you going to believe? Hugo Chavez? Or the opposition party? Hugo Chavez and Smartmatic? Or the opposition party? I'll leave that to you. It says Smartmatic put together a consortium to conduct the recall elections, including a company called BizTa Corp, in which Smartmatic owners had a large stake. For a time, it says, the Venezuelan government had a 28% stake in BizTa, in exchange for a loan. So they had a stake in this company that Smartmatic had purchased. It says BizTa paid off its loan in 2004 and Smartmatic bought the company the following year. But accusations of Chavez government control of Smartmatic never ended, especially since Smartmatic scrapped a simple corporate structure in which it was based in the U.S. with a Venezuelan subsidiary for a far more complex arrangement. The company said it made the change for tax reasons, but critics, including Representative Carolyn Maloney and TV journalist Lou Dobbs, pounded the company for alleged links to the Chavez regime. So you remember Maloney in that report yesterday talking about all these murky connections, and you just can't get a handle really on, you know, what this company is connected to. Now, another wrinkle to this story, if you just fast forward a few years, is where the SGO, I think it was, the SGO company in London, that's again, Lord Moloch Brown. And now you see Smart Moloch has this beautiful British facade out in front. They still have all the Venezuelans in the back, but it's got Lord Moloch Brown. The one with these obvious, leave aside what that Fox businesswoman just said, the one with these obvious connections to George, yes, George Soros. He lived in George Soros' house in the early 2000s while he was serving as a UN ambassador. Okay, that's not a stretch. That's not a conspiracy. So this is the Wall Street Journal from back in 2006. Let me switch over to the New York Times. And Sam was saying there's a lot of detail in this lengthy Times piece. This is October 29th, 2006. The New York Times, the paper of record. U.S. investigates voting machines, Venezuela ties. Were the media mocking this back then? This is the media, okay? It says the federal government is investigating the takeover last year of a leading American manufacturer of electronic voting systems by a small software company that has been linked to the leftist Venezuelan government of President Hugo Chavez. The inquiry is focusing on the Venezuelan owners of the software company, the Smartmatic Corporation, and is trying to determine whether the government in Caracas has any control or influence over the firm's operations. Government officials and others familiar with the investigation said. This is all the big reveal from the New York Times. It says, finally, but after a municipal primary election in Chicago in March, Sequoia voting machines were blamed for a series of delays and irregularities. Smartmatic's new president, Jack Blaine, acknowledged in a public hearing that Smartmatic workers had been flown up from Venezuela to help with the vote. You can't make this up. These Venezuelan owners flying into the United States to try to help with a local election in Chicago. I mean, we played that from that CNN report yesterday. It says here, some problems with the election were later blamed on a software component which transmits the voting results to a central computer that was developed in Venezuela. Well, hopefully that's not so far back that some of the reporters at Fox Business or wherever. No wonder they're losing so many viewers, by the way. It's just perfect. Everything was perfect. Fox was the first one to call Arizona. Fox was right there when the mob announced that Joe Biden was president-elect. Well, as I say, we're going to keep digging as best we can. We don't have a huge staff, but there's some interesting connections when you look at all these companies. And judging by the president's tweet, he is not abandoning Sidney Powell's work or her investigation. Far from it. They're just getting started. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com.
We'll be right back.
This is KPCG FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
How do we hear at the Trumpet Daily radio show? How do we whet your appetite for the Thanksgiving holiday if you happen to be one of our American listeners? Well, how about if we start with Governor Andrew Cuomo, the good governor from New York, the new author, and the Emmy Award winner. Here is Andrew Cuomo on Thanksgiving, clip four.
This is not a normal Thanksgiving. It's a better than normal Thanksgiving. It's a deeper Thanksgiving. It's a more meaningful Thanksgiving. Mariah loves me so much, she's not coming to celebrate Thanksgiving with me. That's how much she loves me.
He's got so much love from his family. They're not coming to Thanksgiving. And of course, the reason they're not coming is because everyone is dying because of COVID-19. So this Thanksgiving, so say the radical leftists in the media, this Thanksgiving has to be a deeper Thanksgiving. This Thanksgiving, it needs to be spent with just your immediate family, if that even. There's one commentator that says she's going to eat her mashed potatoes alone, all by herself. Listen to this media montage from Grabian, clip three.
Eat all of the mashed potatoes by yourself. That's what I'm going to do.
Limit the number of people, do it outside, and wear your mask.
If you go over to a friend's house, mask up the whole time you're not eating or drinking.
If you're a college student, shelter in place for at least 7 days once you arrive.
Separation should be the norm.
Avoiding direct contact, including handshakes and hugs.
Speak softer, because louder voices, shouting, screaming, actually singing, spreads the virus.
Having one person serve all the food so multiple people are not handling the serving utensils.
And open the windows if you can, or have the air blowing out.
Do a lot of FaceTime or Zooming.
I'll be there virtually, but not personally.
A Zoom Thanksgiving is a lot better than an ICU Christmas.
Cancel your plans. Cannot be more clear here.
Invite grandma? This could be her last Thanksgiving? Yeah, if you invite her to a place where she can get sick and die.
People who don't want to miss out on their next family event of Thanksgiving should watch that segment again. Because what you really don't want is your next family event to be a funeral.
Wow. A funeral. Happy Zoom Thanksgiving. How depressing. How depressing. And you know the hilarious part to this story is that there's a surge in travel over this Thanksgiving week in the United States. People are, like with a lot of other subjects, in case you haven't noticed, the ordinary Americans are tuning them out. This is also from CNN, clip five.
It's the rush home for Thanksgiving during the coronavirus pandemic, with travelers packing airports over the weekend, ignoring warnings from the CDC urging Americans to stay home this year. According to the TSA, over 2 million passengers went through checkpoints at U.S. airports Friday and Saturday. That's the most since the early days of the pandemic, which Dr. Anthony Fauci says is concerning.
You're in a crowded airport, you're lining up, not everybody's wearing masks. That puts yourself at risk.
And so here we are, November, deep into November. Another wave of infections. Not deaths, but, you know, there's more testing, so there's more infections. We've just got to go overboard to be safe. Boris Johnson got the disease earlier this year. He's now immune to it. And just to be safe, he's quarantining himself. The leader, the prime minister of the United Kingdom, he came into contact with someone that had COVID. So even though he's had it, he's keeping to himself. He's following the suggestions, at least, some would say orders, of these people in that montage that you just heard. Well, when you step away from the madness, as we try to do on this program, there is a lot, when you look at our history in particular, but even the abundance that's still here. The curses are setting in. There's no doubt about that. and we've drifted far from God. There is no doubt about that. But even still, we can sit down like we did last night in front of a big spread and enjoy relative peace and comfort and all those things that we're able to enjoy in our prosperous nations. And we've all studied history, whether it's with the UK or the United States, when it wasn't so easy. I'm going to give a forum here in just a second with the Academy students and the Armstrong College students. We're coming up to the 400-year anniversary. I'm going to talk about the Pilgrims and the 400-year anniversary of the Mayflower landing at Plymouth Rock, and how that the, I think it was about 103 people on that ship, and that the following year, when they celebrated the blessings of abundance, I think about half of them had died through a frigid winter and because of the spread of disease. And yet those survivors still gathered together to give God thanks for the freedoms that they enjoyed and for the bumper crop that they were enjoying from over the summer. But the trials and the tests that they endured, these were pioneers. These were the trailblazers for the United States. You fast forward to the Civil War years, 1863 in particular. That was a momentous year for Abraham Lincoln and the United States. Lincoln had issued the Emancipation Proclamation in January of that year. He said, "And upon this act, sincerely believed to be an act of justice warranted by the Constitution upon military necessity, I invoke the considerate judgment of mankind and the gracious favor of Almighty God." That was the proclamation on January 1st, 1863. And of course, months later, you still had a nation on the brink. This war that could go either way. And so this great president, the 16th president of the United States, he appointed a day for fasting and prayer, a day to recognize the supreme authority of Almighty God. He said in that proclamation, "It is the duty of nations as well as of men to own their dependence upon the overruling power of God and to recognize the sublime truth announced in the Holy Scriptures and proven by all history that those nations only are blessed whose God is the Lord. We have been the recipients of the choicest blessings of heaven. We have grown in numbers, wealth, and power as no other nation ever has grown. But, he said, we have forgotten God. We have forgotten God." And Lincoln knew that only God could rescue the nation. And God did do that. He rescued the United States. God heard that national prayer, that national prayer offensive, as Herbert Armstrong called it. A couple months after that proclamation, the tide of the war turned against the Confederacy at Gettysburg. And finally, the North gained the upper hand. But when it was all said and done, what was it? 700,000 Americans slaughtered in that Civil War. I've talked before about how popular that classic Key of David program from 1999, I think it was. My father giving it out on location at Gettysburg. This takes us back 20-some years. And here's my father on the Key of David at Gettysburg in the 1990s, clip 7.
"But he, in one sense, brought the nation to their knees just a few months before this battle here at Gettysburg, after the North had lost victories in Chancellorsville and Fredericksburg, Abraham Lincoln went into his room and locked the door, got down on his knees, and prayed to God for victory at Gettysburg. It was already beginning to build, and he knew there was going to be a battle there. Prayed to God, according to Wayne Whipple, one of his biographers, that God would give him victory, and he made a vow to God and said, if you give us victory, I will stand by you, and I will take a stand for you every opportunity I have. And I think Abraham Lincoln did. Now, it is interesting that the tide of war changed here in Gettysburg. Who changed that? Did prayer to God change that? If we were to bring our nation to its knees today, if we had a president or a Congress that had the courage to do that, what a difference it would make in our land. And what a difference it made during the Civil War, even though we might tend to deny that. Look at the fruits. Look at the fruits.
That's from 1999. Those are some powerful words. What a shame when you look at the country today, and we're nowhere near. It's just as divided as it was in the 1860s. But do we have leadership, and do we have a country willing to drop down to its knees to beg to God for forgiveness, to help lead us to repentance and change, to help heal the divide between the two sides? Lincoln said in his Gettysburg Address, he said, we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. He said, this nation, under God, under God. If it's not under God, well, where is it? Or what is it under? You look at our nation today, here again, so drifted so far from God, and really to say drifted, that doesn't adequately describe it. We're hostile to God, it says in Romans 8. Deuteronomy 8, God's talking to ancient Israel here about how that they better be careful when they come into this promised land and receive all of this abundance, this wealth, this prosperity. It says in Deuteronomy 8:11, beware that you forget not the Lord your God in not keeping his commandments and his judgments and his statutes, which I command you this day, lest when you are eaten and are full and have built goodly houses and dwelt therein, and when your herds and your flocks multiply and your silver and your gold is multiplied, and well, everything's multiplied, beware, it says in verse 14, that your heart be lifted up and you forget the Lord your God. All of the blessings, all of the prosperity, and the tendency is in human nature, the tendency is to forget God, to forget God's power, to forget God that he's intervened on our behalf. The God who brought you forth out of the land of Egypt, if you back up to verses 1 and 2 of that same chapter, Deuteronomy 8, it emphasizes the importance of humbling ourselves. Humbling ourselves before the great God. I've gone through that 1838 lecture with you before, the one Lincoln gave, the Lyceum Address in 1838 when he was just 12 years old. And he said in that speech that, you know, we didn't acquire all of these blessings because of our doing. God gifted this to us. God gave this to us. And what have we done in return? We've forgotten him. He said, this is a 28-year-old Lincoln. He said, let every man remember that to violate the law is to trample on the blood of his father and to tear the character of his own and his children's liberty. You'll remember he was really deeply concerned about the rise of these mobs throughout the United States at the time. Mob rule in certain cities. And he said, if we don't uphold law and order, I mean, everything's going to break down. This American experiment's going to come crashing down. He told America, even as a young man, we need to have reverence. Reverence for law and order. We need to revere the Bible. We need to revere God. This was a man who really knew the Word of God from beginning to end. And you can see why God intervened on our behalf when you look at that kind of leadership. Leading the nation in a proclamation or a day of prayer and fasting. Something to think about as we head into this Thanksgiving in the United States. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can write us at td@kpcg.fm. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.